Thank you, Liz. Good morning, everyone. I was reflecting on that interview between Liz and Nick, and it was interesting. It just made me sort of have a wry smile when Liz said at the start, "This is not a domestic chat between me and Nick." But I think we got a window into their world during that, didn't we? When Nick said, "Yes, that was the question you forgot to ask." And then Liz up here said, "Nick, there's somebody else with another question. Get down there now." Hashtag pray for Liz and Nick. We're following the series at the moment, as told by Luke. And we get sent out as a group of people who are prepared to preach the passage which we have to preach to you about. So we reflect on it. And you know, there are times when you look at it and you feel God taking you a certain direction with it. And it's tough. It's tough because it takes you a direction which sort of, you know, will possibly hit home to each one of us in a very different way. We're going to be talking about grief this morning. And this story brings a position of someone who's in the most unimaginable grief. I suppose the first exposure I had to tragedy or loss of a loved one was in my teens. A very good friend at the age of 14 lost his mum, who died at a relatively young age of 40. I'd been close with the whole family and remember the helplessness that I felt at the funeral, seeing a dad and his three children completely crushed. This woman who'd been the matriarch, the strength in the family, here they were, totally overwhelmed with an unspeakable grief. Even now, over 40 years later, I don't feel I will ever fully understand the depth of the loss that they went through and continue to do so for many years. How do people cope when they suddenly have a deeply loved family member spirited away? Well, in truth, I think sometimes we internalize. We close in on ourselves. We seek to deal with it ourselves. And yet when tragedies hit, and let's be honest, they do, why are we not drawn to make use of God's comfort to ease the pain? The passage today introduces this source of comfort. It hints how you can be comforted when tragedy strikes. And we find it from the worst tragedy a mother could experience. We're reading from Luke chapter 7, verses 11, 17, but I'm going to work through verse by verse, if that's okay with you, and sort of stop in between. So we're just going to have verses 11 and 12 to begin with. If you'd like to go and get your the Bibles from the back if you want to, it's on page 1035, and we're starting from verse 11. And it should say, Jesus raises a widow's son. So here we have at the start. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. Now, previous to this, Jesus had been in a town of Capernaum on the shore of Galilee, where he had healed a centurion's servant. The very next day, he and his disciples traveled about 15 to 20 miles to this place called Nain. And he goes there with not just the 12 apostles, but his disciples, those followers who had been enthralled by his miracles, his teachings. You can imagine them making this walk to this other town, that sense of expectation with the crowd. What was this incredible teacher going to do next? They had seen miracles. They had heard amazing things. What was going to happen? We all know that sense of anticipation when we just think there's something amazing and brilliant going to happen. And yet, as they descend into this town, let's just try and picture this for a moment. This expectant crowd heading through the gates of Nain, and they're met by another crowd. And this other crowd, and the mood in this crowd could not have been more opposite than theirs. There is weeping. There is wailing. There is mourning. They're not following a man who feeds them. They're following a dead man. But who was the dead man? Well, it tells us he was the only son of his mother, a widow. Do you know, I don't feel that there are many more sentences in the Bible as desperately sad as this one. She had already experienced the loss of her husband, and now she's lost her son, her only son. This would also mean that she would now be left destitute. She had no way to provide for herself, and she'd have to resort to begging. She would have no one to provide for her, no one to care for her. And yet I doubt in this moment whether this was her primary concern. Right here and right now, she was grieving the loss of a loved one. And in this moment, despite being surrounded by a large crowd, she must have felt above all completely alone. And I can say from experience that there are times in my life when I've been in a crowd and I have felt desperately alone. And I'm sure you've been the same, because nobody knows quite what you're going through. There was nobody to share her grief. Well, there was a large crowd. Some would have been friends, but when you experience this kind of grief, you are more often than not completely alone, even surrounded by the multitudes. Yes, there would have been professional mourners hired to mourn, paid to cry. This was part of the Jewish culture at the time. You paid people to come and mourn with you. And yet, despite there being paid mourners being there, how could they even understand? Who could fathom the grief this woman was going through? And worse yet, when a loved one dies, the world does not stop. Traffic buzzes by. Bills still need to be paid. Birds sing outside your window. The sun comes out. The sun stays out. It gets very hot. People shop. The World Cup goes on. We want the world to pause, to stand still with us, to cry with us, but it doesn't. Life goes on. And when we are amongst people who are grieving, it's really difficult, isn't it? We don't know what to do, how to help. In some cultures, people will be there to drop meals off, to just try and do something that can assist, something that can be one less thing that somebody has to think about. And I wonder whether it was really difficult for this poor, grieving woman, alone and bereaved. She's followed by a crowd, paid to mourn for her. And as she exits the town of Nain, following her dead son's coffin, she is confronted by a party. Joyful, exuberant, excited, a laughing crowd following a man who is very much alive. He's smiling and laughing with his people behind him. His eyes twinkle. Not the kind of person you want or need at a funeral. And we have these two crowds meeting at the gate. It's a face-off. It's awkward. The joyful party, recognizing the excitement, is out of place. and quickly quiets down and adopts a grieving demeanor. But it's hard to change so quickly. It can be so easy for us all to be so embarrassed and helpless when someone we know grieves. It's uncomfortable for everyone. Some of us might mumble polite nonsense, just trying to think of some platitude or something to say. I'm always reminded, and this is the one thing that might raise a smile this morning in this, but one of my favourite sitcoms over the years was The IT Crowd. And there's a wonderful point where they have to go to a funeral. And Moss, who is very socially awkward, is sharing with the other two there. And he said, "I really never know what to say at a funeral." And one of them says to him, "Look, just say, I'm sorry for your loss, and move on." So he goes up along the line and he goes up to this person and says, "I'm sorry for your loss, move on." We never quite know the right thing to say, do we? But I also feel there's a danger when we say nothing. Sandy will tell you that I am not the best person pastorally to deal with things like that, because I never know what to say. I never know how to comfort someone in a position like that. And a few years ago, one of my colleagues, when I worked at Winchester, her father died of cancer, and she came back to work. And the first day she was back at work, I was sat there, and she was sat over the other side doing her work. And I just felt I had to say something. I didn't know what to say. I prayed about it. And I just went over, and to some of you, it might have sounded like the most ridiculous thing to say. I just said, "Life's rubbish, isn't it? Should we go for a coffee?" And she said to me a few months later, she said, "I felt like a leper to most people because they didn't know how to deal with it. And their way of dealing with it was just to ignore me, sort of keep their heads down and let me get on with my work." We become the closest of friends because of that one encounter, and I thank God for that. The widow sees the embarrassment. She sees them shuffle their feet and avert their gaze. Nobody understands her grief except for one man. The man in the center, the man with the laughing eyes, but he's not laughing anymore. He's a man of sorrows. There is somehow a genuine, intense grief and compassion in his eyes. To her, he looks like he understands. As his eyes meet hers, the laughter turns to tears of sorrow. While the rest of the crowd averts their gaze, he alone sees the pain and decides to comfort her. In verse 13, it tells us, "When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, 'Don't cry.'" Now, excuse me, but I am not an expert on pastoral care. But initially, when I was reading through, the words of Christ are quite shocking, straight out of the textbook of how not to do pastoral care. The one thing you say to a grieving person is, "Don't weep." You know, my boys always talk about how Sandy and I had different ways of dealing with them when they were growing up, when they were misbehaving. And they'd get angry and they'd want to sort of have this argument out. And Sandy would have that argument with them. They'd go toe-to-toe and see who could shout the loudest. And I thought, no, I will be the better person here. And I used to say to them, "Calm down." And they will say to this day that that was exactly the wrong thing to say to them when they wanted to deal with that issue, to actually say to them, "Oh, come on, calm down." Never quite worked for them. And even now, I realise that I perhaps didn't do the right thing in that time. But if I was one of those professional mourners in that position, I would have been outraged. "Do not weep. Are you serious? She has lost her only son. You insensitive, cruel man. Tears are restorative. You should be weeping with her." Might we all respond like that? And tears are restorative. and it's okay to cry. No matter what, who you are, it's okay to cry. But we know that Jesus is anything but heartless, anything but cruel. It was through his compassion that he told her not to cry. What is compassion? Compassion is your pain in my heart. And he feels and he knows and he understands her pain. And bizarrely, in this moment of intense grief, she senses his understanding in his words, in his voice. He seems to know more than anyone else, and he's here to help. So we have Luke 14. He went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. So he would have already upset the mourners by saying, "Don't weep to this woman." Now you can imagine the gasps among those there. It would have been obvious by his dress and the crowd of followers that Jesus was some sort of teacher, leader, rabbi. Such people would never touch a dead body or a coffin that held a dead body. Jewish law taught that doing so would make a person unclean. But Jesus came forward, touched the open coffin, and in so he took the taint of death upon himself. One of the things I love about the Bible and learning about Jesus, he was never concerned with protocol or etiquette. You know, it makes me laugh that sometimes, especially in local government, we can become so ingrained with, well, this is what it says in this policy, this is what it says in this, this is what our rules on our regulations, and this is what we've decided to adopt as our position on this. I had the most ridiculous experience during lockdown. I wanted to buy a pot of paint, and there's a shop in Wollstone that was selling paint, and I thought I'd go along and see whether I could go and wait in a queue 10 feet apart, whatever, than this. And I get to the front of this queue, and the guy there said, "Did you ring to order the paint?" And I said, "No." I said, "So do I need to call you?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "What's your number?" And he gave me his number, and I stood there and I went, "Can I have a tin of such and such paint, please?" He said, "Yes, sir. When are you going to be?" He was there opposite me. And he said, "When are you going to be in, sir?" I said, "Well, I could be very quick, actually. I'll be here in literally a couple of minutes." He said, "Sure, I'll have it ready for you." Put the phone, and everyone around me was looking at me going, "Really? Did I just hear that conversation?" Protocol and etiquette. But Jesus, in this position, he wasn't concerned with protocol. In this case, his only concern was to comfort the mourning mother. He touches the coffin. He defiles himself. Only one with great compassion for the bereaved would do that. And those carrying the coffin stopped. Now, it's interesting. The mother has not said anything yet. She hasn't asked for anything. She's not asked for a miracle. Unlike the centurion in the previous chapter, she had not demonstrated great faith, or indeed any faith at all, as far as we know. She may not have even known who this man was who came before her. And yet Jesus' next words are astounding. "Young man, I say to you, get up." If you're in the crowd and you're now putting this man in the category of a madman, the next verse is just mind-blowing. "The dead man sat and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother." Can you imagine those tears flowing from the woman now? Not tears of sorrow, but tears of true joy. Christ-like compassion, unasked for, unsought, but it comes when she needs it. If you're going through a time of trial and testing, if you're facing or have faced tragedy, and this can be 3 weeks ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and it may still be really painful. Please be assured this morning, even if it seems like no one else can see it, Jesus does. If you can't see your way through, he says to you today, don't weep. I will turn your mourning to joy. Now, you probably might have some indignation about that and say, it's like asking the impossible from God in the depths of your despair. Perhaps when we read the words, don't weep, we should be saying to God, okay, where's the comfort, God? Where's the comfort? And in John 13, Jesus gives us a clue as to where the comfort comes from. The disciples are being told Jesus is going to be leaving them. This incredible man that they've been with for 3 years, and he says he's leaving them. But he says to them, don't let your heart be troubled. He tells them he's going to be praying to his Father to send another comforter. And that comforter is the Holy Spirit. It will be the Holy Spirit comforting our grief, comforting us in our sorrows. Jesus meets us in our hour of need. Just like the widow, his solution is one we could not fathom to expect today, but he will meet us through his compassion and provide the comfort and support through the Holy Spirit to carry on. If you're low today, if you're wondering just how to take that next step through today, the Holy Spirit will comfort and support and help us to carry on. We all know people who face tragedies, and many tell a similar story. When all earthly things have been removed from them, they are literally on their knees. And we know there's only one place to look when we're on our knees, and that's upwards. They can only rely on God in that moment to lift them up, to comfort them, and see them through the darkness they're in. J. Hudson Taylor was a missionary in China, lost his wife and two children, and he said these words. He said, I cannot describe to you my feelings. I do not understand them myself. I feel like a person stunned with a blow or recovering from a faint. And as yet, partially conscious. My Father has ordered it. So therefore I know it is. It must be best. And I thank him so for ordering it. I feel utterly crushed. Oftentimes my heart is nigh to breaking. But with all I had almost said, I never knew what peace and happiness were before. So much have I enjoyed in the very sorrow. There is always great intense pain, but for many in the pain, there is a sense of a peace that they never have experienced before. To all who might today have a grief so heavy it's difficult to bear, I would point you to the one who understands pain in the most raw way. Jesus, the man of sorrows. For some who call to the Holy Spirit, comfort comes right away. To others, it comes slower. But when you take that step to allow the Holy Spirit to do his job, when you allow him to comfort those who mourn, he begins that process of turning sorrow to joy and ashes to beauty. I'm reminded of a friend of my mum many, many years ago when I was a teenager. She worked with my mum and she had two lovely young boys who she was taking into town. All three of them were hit by the driver of a car who was over the limit. Neither of the boys survived. I was at an inquisitive age, and I'll be honest with you, I rallied against God. She was a wonderful, God-fearing woman with two lovely boys, and it brought me to a crossroad in my faith. And I struggled with how a loving God, could make this happen. But to be fair, what followed next really made me struggle even more. This incredible woman of faith refused to judge the driver, but expressed forgiveness. She threw herself before God for her strength. And she became an even more incredible woman of faith. She was prepared to say, okay, so if this is really part of the plan, where does the blessing and the comfort come, Lord? I couldn't fathom the faith of this woman, who basically said, where will ashes turn to beauty, Lord? But what I would say is that I often pray now, if I were in a similar position, to have that same strength and dependence on the Holy Spirit when tragedy strikes. Are you suffering? Are you hurting? Have you suffered deep sorrow? Jesus hurts with you. No human being among us can say the right words or do the right thing in what you are facing. God's Holy Spirit can. Jesus says, do not weep. Do not let your heart be troubled. I will give you comfort. And in finishing, I'd say that it might have been a tough listen. It was certainly a tough preach. I'll be honest with you on that. But ultimately, it's about ashes to beauty. None of us can fully understand or fathom the power of God's Holy Spirit to work in our lives and take us from those ashes to beauty. And I pray wherever you are this morning to be open to the Holy Spirit, to let the Holy Spirit work in your life, to help you through where you're suffering, where you're struggling. God is incredible. Thanks be to him.